Thank you to the organisers and to the AMWU for hosting us, and what a great crowd to look around on a weeknight. That this many people would come out to learn about it, such an important issue, but from my point of view, an issue that hasn't attracted nearly enough national scrutiny. I think that's there's some optimism for whoever was saying they want some optimism. Look, I don't have any PowerPoint slides. I think power corrupts and PowerPoint corrupts absolutely. So I'm just going to talk until he tells me to sit down, and then I will. But my name's Richard Dennis. I'm the director of the Australia Institute, a Canberra-based think tank. Allow me to apologise in advance. I'm an economist. Sorry. But actually, before I get to the mining stuff, I just sort of... I do want to talk just sort of slightly about not just the economics but the politics of what we call free trade agreements, because, and I was talking to a journalist about that this exact issue just before I got here tonight, we're sort of asked to pick whose team we're on. Are you in the free trade team or the red tape nanny state protectionism team? Who are you going to barrack for? And unfortunately, I think we've seen the last 20 years that when forced into a silly choice like that, a lot of people end up saying, well, yeah, probably free trade's all right. But let me make it really clear for you. I can knock up a free trade agreement in a sentence. A sentence. It'll take a decade. There will be no restrictions on trade between Australia and the US. There's a free trade agreement. Do you know why it's 1,000 pages long? Full of exceptions. It's full of all the restrictions and trade. So we have these things that we call free trade agreements. And the public is asked, if they're asked anything, do you like free trade? Yeah, oh, Linda, love this agreement. When actually what's happening behind closed doors is different countries saying to each other, look, I'm happy to do in my manufacturing workers. No, I don't know them anything. Who are you got? Oh, okay, you're sick of your sugar industry, eh? All right, well, here's the deal. I'll agree to some opening up of this part of my manufacturing industry if you'll agree to opening up of part of your sugar industry. That's what a free trade agreement is. But it's not there's no restrictions on trade. And by the way, I'm not saying that would be good. I'm just saying that if you're going to have a philosophical or political conversation about free trade, the question is, well, why are the agreements so complicated? And the answer is because no one, I've never met anyone who's in favour of free trade. Is anyone here in favour of free trade? Probably a bit of a progressive group. I see it in conservative groups. I say, oh, you like free trade? Yeah. How about guns? Oh, no. Heroin? No. Children? No. Seriously, like, we have all these restrictions on trade, and we all agree that it's so common sense that when I put them on the table as a restriction on trade, you go, oh, he's just cracking a joke. No, I'm not. As a nation state, we've made a whole bunch of decisions about what we want to regulate our way and what we don't. And a free trade agreement with China is partly about, well, will we have Australia's food safety standards or China's food safety standards? Because if we've got food safety standards that are higher than theirs, what do you think that's called in this lingo? Protection. Oh, it's a restriction on trade. It's legally for sale in China and it's not legally for sale in Australia. Why are you preventing trade? We want our milk homogenised and pasteurised. Just saying. That's a restriction on trade. And we do it all the time. And when those dirty New Zealanders want to sell us apples, we say, hang on, fire blight. When those Filipinos want to sell us bananas, we say, hey, not with your bananas. You're good at growing bananas. We don't want your bananas here. We like our bananas. Yours have got disease in them. So when we talk about free trade, because Australia's a free trade loving country, we love free trade in Australia. There's dirty French, they're protectionists. Right? We love free trade, except for like apples. Bananas and prawns. You know, they poison their prawns overseas. They pour poison on them before they try to export them to us. This isn't true. These are the sort of things we say to justify why we want to have a restriction on imports of prawns. So Australia loves to restrict trade while calling ourselves a free trading country. when the Chinese say, oh, we'd like to restrict trade because we want to help our cheese growers, we say, bloody protectionists. Right? So step one, understand what's going on here. No one's pushing free trade. No one's pushing free trade. No one wants free trade, but different countries are willing to sacrifice different restrictions in order to get some other country to sacrifice some of their restrictions. I don't think that's right. Could be my mum. So these agreements, if they are signed, aren't going to create free trade. Right? They're just going to see some realignment of restrictions in different countries. Now, the Americans are absolutely obsessed with getting rid of intellectual property restrictions in other countries that they don't like. All right, it's been a 20-year part of their strategy to get other countries to have intellectual property rules that they like. Now, that's what they want out of these things. The question is, what do we want out of it, comma, if anything? Because one of the main things our pathetic politicians want is to show up at the deal where they get to sign these things. Because Joe Hockey or Tony Abbott gets to say, look, I'm a serious economic reformer. I've signed 3 free trade agreements. Oh, really? Was there much trade liberalisation in them? No. But gee, there were lots of meetings. Right, we're about to negotiate a free trade agreement with Japan. And if ever this comes up, just say to someone who thinks, oh, we should sign a free trade agreement with Japan, just ask them, does that mean we'll be able to export rice to Japan? Because there's no way the Japanese are importing rice, ever, from anyone. But allegedly free trade-loving people like Hockey or Abbott will actually say we're negotiating a free trade agreement with Japan that will restrict us from exporting rice to Japan. What they really want is a photo opportunity. Seriously, look at that. Oh, John Howard did one with George Bush. How good's that? He said he would never sign a free trade agreement with America unless they opened up their sugar market. You know what we did? Signed a free trade agreement with America where they didn't open up their sugar market. We made the sacrifices they want. They couldn't quite stretch to the number one thing he said he wanted. So that's the context for these sort of free trade agreements. I want to talk briefly about the sort of, you've heard a lot about this ISDS stuff tonight, the investor state dispute settlement stuff. I don't want to cover that ground again. I want to apply it to why I think it matters for coal seam gas and mining. But before I do, I just want to make an important point that I don't think has been made tonight, or if it has, I think it needs to be emphasised. What we're talking about here is creating a dispute resolution mechanism that actually sits above the Australian Constitution. All right. So in Australia, if the Australian government passes a law that appropriated my property and didn't compensate me for it, that would be unconstitutional. Okay? They have to give me compensation on just terms when they appropriate my property. Right? That's what our Constitution does. It protects me from governments arbitrarily introducing a law like that. So the Australian Constitution provides the legal framework within which we make laws in Australia, and then those laws help us in Australia settle disputes. Right? So we've got our own dispute settlement system, and it's underpinned by the Australian Constitution. But there's nothing in our Constitution that says the Australian federal government can't introduce a law to ban fracking. There's nothing in our Constitution that says the government can't increase the taxes on a particular industry. There's nothing in the Constitution that says you can't introduce a regulatory environment to, for example, ban asbestos. Right? There's nothing in the Constitution that says you can't do that. So what if we created a new thing that literally sits above the Constitution and says, all right, well, if the Australian government introduces laws that ban asbestos, how would the foreign-owned asbestos company feel about that? Oh, not very happy. What's the Constitution got to say? Well, it says, get stuffed. I know. What if we let the foreign-owned asbestos company sue the Australian government for the loss of profits that comes with this egregious new legislation that says you can't mine and produce asbestos anymore? Investor-state dispute systems are designed to give certainty to foreign investors. They're designed, the whole purpose of them, is to create a virtual ratchet in the regulatory regimes around the world, where if you cut taxes and that's good for a foreign investor, that's fine. If you reduce regulation and they can increase their profit, that's fine, that's their profit to keep. But you introduce a regulation that's constitutional and supported in both houses of parliament that actually has the effect of reducing someone's profit in the future, or you can't be doing that. So the investor state dispute settlement stuff actually creates a fundamental asymmetry. A fundamental asymmetry, a ratchet in the way our laws are set up. Because it's perfectly fine to change the laws in ways that increase profits for people. It's perfectly fine to change the laws in ways that reduce their restrictions, their health obligations, their safety obligations, their environmental obligations. You can lower the bar, no problem. But if you ever want to raise the bar, oh, hold on there, sunshine, what are you doing? Go check your ISDS obligations. This is fundamentally new. This should be deeply concerning to genuine conservatives, people who think the Constitution is pretty much the bedrock of the little sort of thing we've built for ourselves here in Australia. But we've actually said, oh, the Constitution, no, it doesn't give people enough certainty. Right? But that certainty is, as I said, it's only certainty in one direction. We can make windfall, we can deliver and windfall gains, but we can't clip their wings at any point. So that's what we're on about here. Now, in terms of application to coal seam gas, in Australia, there's a debate, it's red hot in Queensland and New South Wales. It's sort of coming towards Victoria and South Australia. But coal seam gas exploration, fracking, you might have heard something about it, but in a nutshell, it's a brand new idea. And by brand new, I mean really in the last 10 or 15 years, this idea has taken off. And what fracking allows you to do, fracking is short for hydraulic fracturing, is you pump fluid, water with a whole bunch of chemicals and particulates in it, you pump it into the ground to fracture the rocks. But the explicit purpose of fracking is to break rocks. You're breaking them deep underground in the hope that when you break them, that there's some gas that's trapped up under them will kind of bubble up through. And then you can extract the gas. That's hydraulic fracturing of the rocks. And this is a new idea, and if you've seen, you know, the YouTube footage of people turning their taps on and setting them aflame, there's a problem with releasing gas underground by breaking rocks. You don't know where it's going to bubble up. So it's a deeply controversial technique. It's politically interesting in Queensland and in New South Wales because farming groups are red-hot opposed to it, because it bollocks up the water table and actually uses the land. There's pipes running everywhere. You can't drive your tractor over them. So the farmers really don't like fracking. The environmentalists don't like fracking. And it's turned into quite an interesting political campaign up there. But in Canada, I'll just quote a specific example to show you that this is not hypothetical. In Canada, the Canadian government's concerned about hydraulic fracturing under the St. Lawrence Seaway, which, if you remember your high school geography, is a big deal in Canada. An American-owned extraction gas company wants to do hydraulic fracturing under the St. Lawrence Seaway. And the radical pinko lefties in the Canadian government want to get some scientific advice before it happens. I mean, this is real crazy cuckoo land kind of stuff. And to quote from I'm quoting from a newspaper article. Quebec has yet to decide whether fracking, a process to inject fluid into the ground at high pressure in order to fracture rocks, can be conducted safely under the St. Lawrence. If the government is not even allowed to take a time out to study the impact without having to compensate a corporation, it puts a tremendous chill on government's ability to regulate in the public interest, said the director of the Sierra Club. So in Canada, specific proposal, someone wants to frack in Canada, American gas company. Canadian said, well, I haven't even made my mind up yet, but I really would like to collect some evidence before I said yes. The Canadian government's being sued for $250 million for lost profits. this company saying, look, if you just say yes the minute I asked, I could be making money by now. See, I'm not making money yet. That's your fault. So I'd like to sue you. Not sue you through the Canadian courts under the Canadian Constitution, where the court would say, well, actually, Canada has its own planning arrangements. This decision is in no way inconsistent with Canada's planning obligations, so, you know, sucks to be you, stop whinging. In fact, as you heard before, this appeal goes to a bunch of trade lawyers, and they're asked, is this inconvenient? Is this slowing down investment? Is this creating uncertainty? If so, potential lawsuit. So, oh good, well, I'll wrap. See, I always pretend I was about to finish, but no matter where I was up to. So the Australia Institute, as I said before, we're a think tank based in Canberra. We've been very interested in this stuff for a long, long time. In fact, back in 2002, 2003, we were very heavily involved in the US-Australia Free Trade Agreement and the dispute about the inclusion of the pharmaceutical benefits scheme. In fact, when we first drew attention to the issue, we got called conspiracy theorists by the then Minister Vail. Soon after, we were attacked from Hawaii from the then US negotiator, Bob Zolik, again saying, you know, they're whipping up a scare campaign, we don't really want to make pensioners pay more for their drugs in Australia. And then when the whole deal was done and dusted, the Americans said, we're really pissed off that we didn't get to charge more for drugs. They denied it the whole way through and said, it's not even on the agenda. Right? They attacked us for saying it was on the agenda. We knew it was on the agenda, people leak. WikiLeaks makes it better. But people have always leaked. We knew it was on the agenda. They flat out lied to the Australian public and said, we're not, it's not an issue, it's not even being considered. Yeah, right. So anyway, so we've been interested in this for a long time. I think tomorrow we're releasing a new report into community attitudes towards the TPP. So if anyone's interested in this, the easiest thing to do, I'd say, is, you know, follow the Institute on Facebook or sign up for our e-bulletin on our website. We'll let you know when we release stuff, or just flick me an email or something. But just some quick numbers to make you realise that this room is actually, well, it's unusual that people come out in a weeknight, good on you for it, but you are massively in the majority. I'll just read you some quick responses to some of the questions we asked. Nearly 85% of those surveyed expressed concern about the ISDS, 85%. By the way, only 10% had heard of it. Right? So there's supposed to be a public consultation process going on. The first question was, have you got any idea what this survey is about? No. All right, well, let me tell you a little bit about it. 85%, once you tell them what it is, 85%. Virtually, you know, you split it by Labor, Liberal, Green voters, the opposition looks about the same across. The Nationals are more opposed to it than most, keep that in mind. 67% of respondents said they don't trust the federal government's promise that free trade agreements won't increase the cost of medicine. 67% said they don't trust the government when they say these things. 76% said that they wouldn't support Australia being prevented from requiring GMOs to be clearly labelled. 76% are opposed to preventing GM labelling. 85% of Australians think Australia should set its own standards for quality of goods sold here. Remember what I said at the beginning? Don't ask people whether they like free trade. Ask people whether they think we should be in charge of our own health and safety standards. Ask people whether we should be in charge of our own industrial relations standards. Ask people simple questions that they can understand, not bizarre abstract questions like, do you like free trade? Like, do you like mums? You know, those in favour of mums. I've never seen a free trade agreement. 73% of Australians thought Australia would benefit from stronger regulation on what can be imported into this country. That's the exact opposite of a free trade agreement. 73% of Australians thought Australia would benefit from stronger regulation on what can be imported into the country, and 64% would not support a trade agreement that allowed Australian television stations to show fewer Australian-made programs. You are not in the minority. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that. Do you mind taking a couple of questions?
Done.
Okay. We've got
COVID heckling as well.
Oh, oh, good. All right. Let's keep that in mind. There's one and then two. Start first.
Have you got any data on the effect of the US-Australian free trade agreement?
No, because no one does, because no one looked, because no one cares. The whole argument for why we needed a free trade agreement was to have all these massive benefits. And then as soon as we did the deal, was there any analysis? No. So, but we have had pinko lefty groups like the Productivity Commission saying that these claims are typically exaggerated and, you know, create an exaggeration. So I'm not even there doing it. So the short answer is no. If anyone looked, I don't think they would find any. But let me give you a really simple example. We have a so-called free trade agreement with the US. When it was being marketed to the community, it was marketed on the basis that it would give us access to more choice at lower prices and consumers would benefit. When an American downloads an In Excess song from iTunes, they pay a lower price than you do. Americans pay less for Australian music on iTunes than Australians do, because the so-called free trade agreement between Australia and the US does nothing to prevent foreign music companies charging Australians arbitrarily high Australian prices. So no, there's no data, because no one's looked, because no one really cared. John just wanted his photo with George, you know? And behind the scenes, some people got some things they wanted that had nothing to do with what they said they wanted.
Yeah, that was actually brought up in Parliament with Apple, and the Apple people said to just change the country of origin when you sign up for your iTunes account.
Yeah. Ed Husic, Labor MP from Western Sydney, has raised this issue quite a lot in Parliament. The Australia Institute, we've done lots of work on online retail and the outrageous price differences that occur. It's cheaper to fly to America to buy some software and then hop on a plane and fly back home. I'm not kidding. But when you get back home, the software won't work. Because when you turn your computer on, your computer says, you appear to be in Australia. And our software is smart enough to know you paid the American price. So if you'd now like to pay an extra couple of $1,000, see, it's not me. Unless you pay an extra couple of $1,000, this software won't work until you take your laptop back to America. That's free trade. Yeah, right.
All right, and there's a lady.
Thanks for that wonderful talk. Can you just say slowly, what's the website I'm going to go to?
All right. So the Australia Institute. It's the most grandiose title you can have. It's fantastic. Whenever someone says, Richard, why did you do that research? I said, happened in Australia, didn't it? We're a broad organisation. So the Australia Institute, if you Google it, you'll find it. But the actual web address is just TAI, as in the Australia Institute.org.au. Facebook, Twitter, you name it, it's all there. Or personally, Richard Dennis, I've never said no to a Facebook friend, and I don't take photos of my lunch. So. All I do is get angry about politics.
One last one.
You made a comment before in regards to, at the very start, if the Australian Constitution doesn't mention something, there's something higher than that. Is that correct? Can you just repeat that example?
Yeah. So if the federal government were to pass legislation today that appropriated union property off it, said, right, you know that land the union thinks it owns, we'll have that. The unions would go straight to the High Court and say, I'm sorry, the Constitution actually protects us. Yeah. The nation state isn't allowed to just arbitrarily take my property. My point is the Constitution is designed as a dispute resolution system. We've had it for 200 years, it works pretty well. The investor state dispute settlement stuff that you heard about today. This is a new idea that gives only foreign companies access to a different dispute settlement. So even though the Australian government might pass a law like banning fracking, that the Australian High Court says, no, that's constitutional. You know, you never, no one ever promised you you could frack, right? You never bought fracking rights, right? You just invented this new technology and thought you'd do something dangerous. We're going to stop you, right? So the Constitution protects investors like it protects you and I, but the protections aren't good enough for foreign investors.
I think you gave a different example at the start, but the point that I wanted to make was you said that if the Constitution doesn't mention it, I forgot how you phrased it, but the point that I wanted to make was in the annotated version of the Constitution, it clearly states whatever power is not granted is denied.
Yeah.
So in other words, that if the an example would be for this situation, if the Australian government wanted to legislate, yet they weren't granted powers in, say, Section 51 or Section 52 in the Australian Constitution, automatically, according to the Australian Constitution annotated version, in the Hansard debates, it clearly states that it's denied. And the only way the Australian government could get the power to actually legislate on something like this would be to actually enforce a referenda and get the consent of the majority of the people from every state and the Commonwealth.
Yeah.
And without that, that would be unconstitutional. So I'm not sure if you're aware of that, but I thought I'd just throw it out there.
Yeah, no, look, I'm not a constitutional lawyer, but I have spoken to a few about this. There are restrictions. Basically, what the ISDS, and maybe there's someone here who knows more about it than me, never assume economists know everything. We really don't. But what we're talking about with these deals, the TPP or a free trade agreement, is the Commonwealth Parliament has to pass what's called enabling legislation. Right, the enabling legislation has to pass our parliament, and that parliament can set up new rights that currently don't exist. Now, those rights can't be unconstitutional, but those rights can be new. All right, and what I'm saying is, at the moment, a company can't sue a government for saying, I don't like your proposed change in policy. All right, I don't like it. It's going to cost me money. And we say, oh, bad luck. But the ISDS, if we are to create it, which would have to be created out of enabling legislation, would give them a right that currently doesn't exist. My point is, why the hell would we want to do that?
There's another short answer as well. There's probably foreign affairs power, the communist power, a whole bunch of other powers that are there in 51.
Look, it's a very valid point, and it certainly is very relevant and an interesting one. But we might have to come back at the end for those who are interested in that one. We'll come back to that question then. So thank you very much.
No worries. Thank you.